All right, today, believe it or not, where are the parades today? Abe, you don't know what I'm talking about. May 1st, 2023, the communist parades in Israel. When I came back from Russia, I was so angry. But when the Russians came in Aliyah, they abolished the parades. You follow? Okay. Today's Shia, I want to dedicate in memory of someone we've mentioned over the decades. Rabbi Louis Werfel. I know for you it's just the name, Eliezer in Hebrew. When I entered the yeshiva in 51, he was still a living reality. He was a Talmud Muvhak of Reb Moshe Soloveitchik, one of the brightest out of the 30s. And he and Rabbi Michal Bernstein, who was another Talmud Muvhak, were running after the same girl. And Rabbi Werfel won. He married her, Adina, and he was the only Orthodox chaplain killed in World War II. Now, he's buried in Tirat Tzvi, the key religious kibbutz. Why he's buried there, I don't know. It could be he had family there, could be he intended to go on Aliyah there. And they saw his monument was falling apart. And they rebuilt it, and mamish, while this shir is on, they're rededicating it. So, and you should know that his almana, the Zivik Sheni, married Rabbi Michal Bernstein. And she was, everyone stood in awe for her. Isha Gadola, the Rav, my classmate, Reb Chaim Soloveitchik, we used to say, Chaim fears no one except God and Adina Bernstein. She was something so special. I knew her. I didn't know Rabbi Werfel, obviously, but I knew her. And there was an award given out in the yeshiva in memory of Rabbi Werfel. That much I can tell you. That name lived on in my time. So, Yehei Zichro Baruch. I don't know if this is a correction or not. I turned into such a pupil about the RCA Bethin. Rabbi Dov Schreier writes to me after I mentioned what he told me, what I thought was right in yesterday's Shia. Rabbi Yonah Reis is still involved in the RCA based in New York, but he's the Av Beitin of Chicago Rabbinical Council. In other words, the CRC in Chicago has its own based in. Rabbi Willick is the Av Beitin of the Beitin of America. Rabbi Shlomo Wiseman is the Menachel. So Yomo says this is not entirely correct. He wrote a letter to Rabbi Schreier. But Halacha L'maisa, we have a Beis Din in New York and a Beis Din in Chicago, and they both cooperate with each other. And I know that Rabbi Schwartz was in Chicago and also with the Beis Din in New York. He was the leading figure. All right, today it could be there's more of a split, but it's a split with cooperation, not about some of the splits we're going to talk about today.
Was it a split? It was separate.
Said I understand. New York is New York and Chicago is Chicago. But the question is the general overall structure. And I thought that the Beis Din in Chicago is a branch of the RCA. No, it's a separate Beis Din. It's the CRC Beis Din. Zelichud v'zelichud. Regarding Satma, so Rabbi Grinstein sent this to me, that it turned out the Seder of the Hillim that they learned, that it, the Heyiyah turned out to be Kapitlach Kudjafalif through Kuf Tatvav, those are Halil, what we say Halil. So here's a Moda'ah from Satma. Hayot shalafi seida mira tefillin hayu chalomer biyom hamava hanimhar heiya yom hakamat hamedina hatmeya hakapitlach shel pikei halel al kainitz tavanu mipi hakadosh shel kavod moran rabbeinu hagoin hatzadek shlita lishanot seida hamira tehillim. And underneath it tells you what you say each day. And all right, I've seen it. I can believe anything, because at my age, what I've seen in my life. On the other hand, a letter was posted online This was sent to me by a Talmud from 770. And the only Hasidim in the world who know about Hei Iyah, it's Satma. The person writes, I don't know if it's a boy or a girl, a woman or man. I remember it was an English teacher in Satma Cheder about 20 years ago. And Hei Iyah walked in, and the kids were all pumped up after a speech they had about this day and against Tzionim. They asked me if I'm a Tzioni. I was thinking to myself, in Gera Cheder and Parapak, you can go in and ask the kids, Hei Iyah, what is it? No one would know. But in Satma, everyone knows about Ehi Yah. It's a shame, but that's the Jewish people in Malasat. Now, on the other hand, my dear Talmud Steve Groh writes to me about Ehi Yah. You know what Bikur Cholim is. Dr. Bernie Kabakal, the famous Dr. Bernie, my dear friend, Zichrono Levracha. So Bernie used to say to me, Aaron, we don't like Satma, but one thing they do well that we can admire them, Bikur Cholim. So Steve writes to me on Yom HaTzmut, there's a celebration, a fundraiser for Bikur Cholim at the home of a prominent West Side real estate developer named Weinreb. And my mother is going, Steve's mother, 95 years old, a great lady, or maybe more already. And they're celebrating, it's Yom HaTzmut, but to raise money for Bikur Cholim, they're doing it. Imagine Satma celebrating Yom HaTzmut. They must have been listening to your Shiurim. So, and then there's a compliment on what I published. Okay. Now, regarding the Daf Yomi Shir in Borough Park, remember I told you that the Daf Yomi Shir before 58, there were just two Shirim in all of America. One of them was in Borough Park, Shmuel Kalmersky. So my dear student, Dr. Alan Blau, he's a psychologist, he happens to be the head psychologist in the Satmar Referral Service here. I think there's some 20 psychologists working under him. He was here a few months ago in this room. He's coming in Aliyah, they're planning it out. So Alan writes to me that, yes, Rabbi Mirsky in the Young Israel of Borough Park, which Vic knows well, did give a Daf Yomi. But he was assisted, one day he gave, another day Alan Blau's grandfather, Rav Petachia Tzvi Blau. And he describes his grandfather, a simple, unassuming Jewish immigrant from Galicia. He worked in a sweatshop sewing clothes, had no formal education whatsoever. And he was drafted into the Austrian army during World War I. And became one of the highest-ranking Jewish officers in the cavalry. In a picture from that era, he looks like an Austrian officer without a hint of being Jewish. No one knows how he got so much knowledge. He knew almost all of Torah Shebichtav and Torah Shebaal Peh by heart, served as the Baal Korah in the Young Israel, and he was so poor, he didn't own a shas. Out of gratitude for the Daf Yomi Sheh, he shared with Rabbi Mirsky, those who attended chip in to buy him a shas, which my father in turn received from him, and I received from my father. So that's a beautiful little episode. If you want to know what the Rebbe goes through, I can just fill you in. A Talmud of mine from BMT from 50 years ago, at least 50 years ago. So he calls me Erev Shabbos to give me Musa that I give Stolzkeit to the Hasidim. He told me what he found fault with, that I mentioned in an article I wrote in Jewish Life and was republished in Rakafet Aron, about my basic training, and I think I write about it in Washington as well. And if you recall, I went into the army and Tainit Esther. And Purim, here we are in the army, and they're drilling us and whipping us. You know, they want to get you into the, understand what basic training is about. And it's no Purim, it's Purim. It's Betel. I have to observe Yudalid. And at about 1 o'clock, a bus pulls up, and a whole group of Chabotnikim jump out, and that's it. All training ended. We had a big simcha, a suda, we're dancing, and oh, what went on. And I said, and I wrote in the article, another Litvak bit the dust. So he finds fault. You should know that that came up at an RCA, at an OU convention where I spoke, and a Chabotnik spoke, and the Chabotnik quoted that part of the article, and we kissed each other in front of hundreds of people, and everyone was a... So I'm getting mussar for that. And then I'm getting mussar for my give and take with Morty Tarragon. Morty, you remember you had your outside and you fast. And I said, I'm a Chatzi Yevit, Chatzi Ben Chorin. I don't fast. At my age already, my fast shall survive Tisha B'Av and Yom Kippur. And I said, I do a Siyum like a Litvak, and then I make a Hilula like a Chassid. So he found fault with me. So Baruch Hashem, not easy to be a Rebbe, but I accept the criticisms as well as the compliments. But this is a good introduction to today's Shia. Because as I said last week, if I, you know, the Daf Yomi, if I'm teaching high school or college, I'd already introduce the Daf Yomi. Last week's Shia, we went a little deeper. Today we're going to finish out the Daf Yomi. You'll see it's all part of the theme that I just introduced. And we're going to go into Yeshivat Chachmei Lublin. So in high school, college, I'd be Yotze, he established Chachmei Lublin. I want to show you the Atmos Nefesh that Rav Meir Shapiro had. And unfortunately, this remains part of the Torah scene. What I told you last week, pass the story on. Again, I believe I wrote it up in Washington. Does anyone know Washington by heart and help me? Because I forget what I said in class or what I said elsewhere and what I said to my family and what I wrote. But that story says it all. Here I am, a little kid in high school, in Rabbi Bornstein's Shia. And everyone's talking, it's 1954, and everyone's talking about Rav Noach Bornstein, the top Talmud of the Brisker Rav. I'm now reading a book that Rabbi Unger lent me, said, Rebbe, you got to read this, it's on Rav Meshulam David Soloveitchik, the Brisker Rav's last surviving son, who was the Rebbe of Rabbi Yitzchak Lichtenstein and many others. And Rav Meshulam David, when he started to learn, the Brisker Rav assigns him to Rav Noach Bornstein. My son, this is what the Brisker Rav thought of Rav Noach, that when his son, already a teenager, needed a chavruta, he assigns him to Rav Noach Bornstein. So I was in Rav Noach's shir, and everyone's talking about Lubavitch. So we go, we spend the weekend, it was arranged hospitality in Crown Heights. And as a kid, I asked my host, I don't even remember his name, but he changed my whole life until this very second. And through me, he changed other lives. So I asked my host, what's the difference between you and a good Yisrael? To me, they're dressed in black. You're dressed in black. You wear black hats. They wear black hats. And he says to me, the difference is very simple. If Aguda built 50 mikvot, the Mizrahi would invalidate them. If the Mizrahi built 50 mikvot, Aguda would invalidate them. We at Chabad would send a telegram, Yasher Koyach to the Mizrahi and Yasher Koyach to the Aguda. That answer, fabulous. Now, the same thing with the Daf Yomi. And here, Yehoshua Grinstein said, you left the impression last week, Rebbe, that all the Chassidim accepted the Daf Yomi. All right, I don't think I left that impression, but I told Yehoshua today I'm going to be a little bit sharp, and I thank Wikipedia for the details. But you see, even an idea like Daf Yomi, Such a beautiful idea. I don't like tradition when she published a very critical article. I didn't like it. I'm not an idiot. I understand someone learns that I have Talmud Lindem. I once saw Talmud Tum Daf Yomi. I thought he was saying Ashrei. Ashrei is learning a Daf Yomi. All right, that's not the Daf Yomi. I do an Amud Yomi. I'm going through Shas a third time. I started in 1975. You know why I started, Mark? I'll tell you the secret. One time in my life I was on it. One time. 1975. I was given the Bernard Revel Award. It was a result of a student that I had in BMT, Lenny Davidman. And I was matzliach, like the story I told you with the tapes of the Rebbe. It all begins with J. Holzer. And I inspired Lenny Davidman. His father was big in YU alumni. Remember his father, Ruby Davidman? He was the Menachel of the Be'er Sheva Yeshiva, then of BMT. Then he worked for the Jewish Agency. His father, they're looking to give Revelus, the only time they gave the three graduate awards in Israel, he fought it has to be Rakefet. So when they honored me that night, people are saying, Rav Rakefet, Bucky and Shas and Paiskim. I said to him, I'm Bucky and Shas and Paiskim, 1975, I said to myself, that's when I said, you better live up to what they think of you. And that's when I started an Amud Yomi, but I learned the Amud, Rashi, Tosfot, Rambam, Piskei Halacha, Iyunim of Steinsaltz. Follow me? By the way, Rav Elyashiv used to go through his Iyunim as well, I'm told. And that's learning. You're going to compare that to someone saying, Ashrei Yoshrei, may some But don't be critical. Better they should daven up a daf yomi. It opens up learning. You can't tell who's affected, each one on his own level. So you see, the whole daf yomi, what really caught on was the Gerer Rebbe. To be honest, had the Gerer Rebbe not said that Rosh Hashanah, Ichalzich, I'm rushing, Chtafzich, I'm finding the Daf Yomi. The Hasidim heard the Rebbe learn Daf Yomi, the rush began. So here's what's interesting. The Daf Yomi caught on, and that's why I ended off last week's year. And I told you how many Yerushalmi Yomi, the Rambam Yomi, there was just the Siyam, everyone is involved. But this is the sad part. Here in Yerushalayim, the Rabaralas also started a Seder. You have to learn every day, an Amud Yomi, a Daf Yomi, but they wouldn't call it a Daf Yomi. It was called Limud HaKehila. It's what we have to learn in our Kehila. Daf HaKehila. I'm quoting from a very fascinating Wikipedia article which shows you everything that began. But they wouldn't call it a Daf Yomi. Daf HaKehila. Why? Agudat Yisrael. See, the Daf Yomi became identified with Agudat Yisrael. Now, I'm a Mizrahiite, 100%, 1,000%, but I'm not going to learn Daf Yomi because it began with Agudat Yisrael. I have to be insane, or my hatred for my fellow Jew all becomes my love of Torah. And see, this is the sad part, and this lives on until today. What I spoke about yesterday, that editorial in Yated Ne'aman, I would take it and throw it into the Lag BaOmer bonfire. I couldn't believe my eyes. You want Mizrahi people like myself to support something that's against democracy and against Torah and exempt every male from serving in the army if he's learning in a yeshiva. All right, b'di'evit, we're supporting it. The Chadalim is supporting it. And then you write anyone going to our demonstration in favor of the reforms, they're not our people, they're not good Jews, oh my gosh. Where's your Hakarat HaTov? But this is our tragedy. And I come back to what I've said so many times. If you have a Rebbe who says, my way or the highway, run to the highway as quickly as you can. If you have a Rebbe who says, my way, and there are many other ways, it's up to the individual, the Mishnah in Sanhedrin. Everyone is different. Ribbono shel Olam, God created the first man, and look how different everyone is. But the basis, we walk before God and man in dignity and dedication, that's it, that's the human being. But no one commanded us to think the same way. I got an interesting shaila yesterday that I never got before. A young man evidently struggling, a very fine young man. I was very impressed with him. Someone sent him to my shir, should come and hear. And he asked me if the Rav had anything to say about Lavush. I understood the question. He's learning in Mir and he has a beard and black clothes, white shirt. Tell me, Lavush, how did the Rambam dress? Is there anyone in Lakewood? You come from Lakewood. You learned in Lakewood, Ben. Is there anyone in Lakewood who dresses like the Rambam? Is there anyone who dresses like Avraham Avinu? You're not Yotzei Shemin Esrei. If you don't have Kavanah, Avraham Yitzchak V'Yaakov, right or wrong? I don't have much Kavanah, but I try my best. The first bracha, please, have Kavanah. All right. You see, there's no... By the way, Balei Tshuva, I used to see at the Kotel Friday night. I missed the Kotel, I have to tell you. 46 years I was living like a good Jew, but the legs went zehu zeh. But Friday night you'd see Balei Tshuva in robes. So I asked them... English, you always have to speak English, because right away you can be sure these Balei Tshuva are Australians, Americans, not too many Canadians, not too many South Africans, whatever the reason is. And so I asked him, what are you wearing? He said, well, this is the way Avraham Avinu went. Mark, you're a smart guy, you have many degrees. Prove to me that Avraham Avinu wore robes like that. The Rambam, the Rav, when he greeted Rav Nisim at YU, so the Rav is speaking Hebrew, he knew modern Hebrew, and he's speaking for Rav Nisim. Achshav ani roeh b'dimyon eicha Rambam nireh, eicha Chacham Sfadi nireh. And Nisim answers the Rav, you want to see what Sfadi Chacham look like? Come and aliyah to Israel, and you'll see the way we're dressed. But you see, all I'm saying is, there's no halacha levush. We wear clothes. We sanctify the clothes. We wear proper clothes. We wear tzitzit. Women are snuot more than have to be more than men, for obvious reasons. I don't like these women who carry on that the men are ruining, you know, the shvachot. What's going on here with these demonstrations with the women dressed in orange, that we treat them like shvachot? Ribbono shel Olam, a Torah man treats his wife 1,000 times better than all these people demonstrating, and I can prove it 1,000 ways over, but it's not for now. All right, but not only the Daf Yomi, Yeshivat Chachmei Lublin, Rav Meir Shapiro stepped into a minefield, and with all the achievement, there was a great deal of Agmas Nefesh. Now, let's begin at the beginning. What troubled him? What caused the problems? The Hasidic world, as I mentioned, everyone learned Torah. There's Gezitzin in Ashtibel. I'm breaking into Yiddish, not good, but if you don't understand me, raise your hand, I'll translate if I can. Gezitzin in Ashtibel, you know, when you learn... There was no dignity. There was no order. Rav Meir Shapiro suddenly comes along and he wants to do something entirely different. And here, we've spoken about this, and it's part of your thinking and my thinking. It's part of being a Torah Jew. We know what we have. We don't know what we're going to get. And we're hesitant. And it goes back to the Chatam Sofer, Chadash Asur Min HaTorah. It was taking a figurative concept of Chadash Asur. By the way, Abe, it's a big halachic problem. Are you allowed to eat bread in America before Pesach ends, etc., etc.? But literally, he took it. Anything new is forbidden. And you see, when the Reb Meir Shapiro comes along with this idea, there is an innate, I would say, it's almost part of our DNA. What's with him? What is he, crazy? What is he, off the wall? Millions of dollars, beautiful building. So you see, at the very outset, the Torah Jew is frightened to get involved with something grandiose. Now, I can tell you, in the United States of America, with my cousin, with Rabbi Revel, and it is a big yichus I have. The only trouble is, I only found out about it when it was too late in life to help me. Could you imagine if I would go through YU, a cousin to Rabbi Revel, and unfortunately, there's no one left. He had no descendants. His sons never married, etc. It's very sad. His half-brother, or it was an uncle, I have to check out what I wrote, was the president of Cincinnati, of Hebrew Union College. Nelson Gluck, Professor Nelson Gluck, was Revel's half-brother, I believe, or it was an uncle who was, or a cousin. There was a blood relationship there. And he was totally reformed. He divorced his wife. He didn't give her a get. Rabbi Revel pleaded with him to give a get. There shouldn't be a shayla of mamzeret. You follow? He finally gave a get, only to pacify his blood relative. But very little remains. But when Revel, you see, he married into a wealthy family. Rabbi Zivitz of Pittsburgh made the shidduch. Anyone here from Pittsburgh would know who Rabbi Zivitz was. Rabbi Zivitz, big another gadol. And he traveled to Ohio at times and served as rabbi in small communities, answered their shayla, etc. And he made the shidduch with this girl from Marietta, Ohio. Rabbi Revel went into the family business, and he had remained, had the family not had problems with Esso, which stand at all, he would have never been a Rosh Yeshiva, would have never come back to New York. He was sitting in Oklahoma, writing Chiddushei Torah, and working in the family business. He had to be in the oil fields 4 o'clock in the morning, 5 o'clock before the heat. He had to finish by midday, and then he went home and wrote Chiddushei Torah. So when they finally plead with him to come to New York, come back to New York, he had organized a high school, and they want him to come back. The yeshiva is having difficulty without him. And he comes back, and he has this great dream of the college and an uptown campus, get away from the Lower East Side. People thought he was crazy. People laughed at him. And even within the Torah community, whatever there was in America, they were sarcastic. Vasreta, Vasvela Upton, what is he dreaming? What are we talking about? Who are we? What are we? Vastafman's us. What do we need? So much money, wasted land, building. So you see, the Maram Shapiro was caught up with the same problem. Now, what helped him was the fact that he was a Chutka B'chassid. And this is what I mentioned very quickly in passing, but now I want you to understand it in detail. Rabbi Yisrael Friedman, the Chutka Rebbe, was the grandson of the first Rushin Rebbe, who later has to move to Sadegur because of a whole it's a whole story where a Jewish informer was killed on Yom Kippur. It's a whole story. And he was arrested, he was accused, they finally exiled him. It was done not by him, but by Hasidim, obviously. And a moser, they paskin that din a moser, chayev misa, chayev mita. And Rishon moves to Sadegera, and the Tchotkov was one of the sons of the second Rebbe, and he was a grandson, and he was in Tchotkov, and he was very big. Again, Tchotkov today, as I mentioned, remains in Antwerp and in Manchester, I'm told. It's nowhere else in the world. It's very small. Hard for you to understand that before World War II, Tchotkov was almost as big as Gare in Poland. It was massive. Now, the Tchotkov Rebbe, although he had reservations, as we will see, he supported Reb Meir Shapiro. And here, you have to put together what I mentioned in passing, Gadlut HaAdam, Rishon Malchut. And this comes back to a basic machloket, we alluded to it yesterday. I come from Litta. If you read Rabbi Dr. Aaron Adler's book on the Rav, 70 Conversations by Ibn Sorens, it's a very nice volume. Although I corrected him, no one gives me the credit, no one understands. They write down, I'm the editor of the two volumes on the Rav. Joey Epstein was the editor. I'm the author. They don't realize everything I put together, there was Yesh Meayin. Today, some of it is available, so they think you can take it from here, there, and everywhere. Not in the 1990s, my dear students. Far, far from it. The writing of the Rav was Haschacha Pratit. I write about it in Washington, how I would take notes on the tapes that Manny gave me. And whenever the Rav talked about his life, I would write it in a different colored ink. Could you imagine? Why did you do that? Years later, decades later, when I had to pull it together, thousands of pages of notes. Whenever I saw a different color, that's it. That's what we have to translate. That's what Joey had to edit. That became the Rav. So you see, I'm a Litvak. You read Aaron Adler. Aaron Adler portrays the Rav as having a very negative attitude towards the Muslim movement. Certainly towards Shiflat HaAdam. And I think yesterday I quoted from Ish Halacha. I don't want to repeat myself. In Ish Halacha, he differentiates between Gadlut HaAdam and Shiflat HaAdam, between Slabatka and between Nevarik. But you see, here there's a very delicate question. What do we stress? Who are we? Who are we? And chinuch, education. How do you tell a youngster? What do you say to him? Slabatka, yitzir kapov shela kadosh baruch hu, vataseo miyat me Elohim. Remember how many times I heard this in Musa Shmusen from the Mashkiach? Or do you tell a kid, you're a bum. Your Yetzirah overwhelms you. What do you do? What do you accomplish? What's going to be with you? Shape up or ship out. How do you approach it? And I have to tell you, Nevadik, it's not entirely off the map. And I want you to understand, everyone laughs. You go into a person selling potatoes and ask him for nails, right? What, are you crazy? Yeah, but Nevadik knew what it was doing. The guy would laugh at you. What are you crying? Du bist am Schugene. Geh weg from da. Get out of here. I'm selling potatoes, not nails. Prepares you for the world. The world today laughs at us. Progressive world, liberal world. Kefe, you're a black person. Shachar. Dishkat HaShchorar, if you know what I'm talking about. You're one of those primitives. All right. When you've gone to Nevadik, you say, oh, that's what you think of me. I am honored by your description. Follow me, Charlie? It isn't off the wall. There is something to it. But it's a homachoiket. Same thing. Malchut. Rujin. Malchut. If anyone here are sons of a chassid, you hated the Rushim. There was war between them. They say there was shvichat donim ad kedei kach. Sons, the Rebbe never went to sleep with money in his house. Every penny was distributed to tzedakah. Rushim, a bekeshu with golden threads. Chassidim dressed like soldiers. Carriage drawn by six horses, not by one. It's a different world. The Tshatkava could appreciate Reb Meir Shapiro. And Reb Meir Shapiro, by being a Tshatkava Chassid, was evidently imbued with the concept, dignity, wealth, gold, silver, perfection. The Gemara in Psachim, that all the extra gold that came to the Beis HaMikdash that they didn't need for the Kalim, they displayed. Ain't there's nothing lacking, the Gemara says, in this holy place. Everything is perfect. And then you come to the drasha of the original the stone laying ceremony, the brick laying ceremony. What would you call it in English? Brick, stone, what's the word they use?
Cornerstone.
Cornerstone, that's the word. Good. The cornerstone laying ceremony, which was like 6 years before the building was completed. And here at this cornerstone laying ceremony, Chassidim, Jews, the Litvakin, were laughing at Reb Meir Shapiro. What are you doing? What are you going to accomplish? Whoever heard of such a thing? What is this, a Beis HaMikdash? Quoting the Gemara now, Ein aniyut b'mokam ashirut. Remember, they used to give the animals to drink out of beautiful silver cups. Ein aniyut b'mokam ashirut. Well, who are you? What are you? And that was Reb Meir Shapiro's famous drasha. The drasha that saved me in Australia that first night in Melbourne. It was one of the high moments of my young life. And you understand, luchat shniyat, it's a catchword. Mark, you walk into class and you're dressed all up, a tie, a shirt, a jacket, the latest style, and the Rebbe says to you, Mark, luchas shniyas. You know what he's telling you? It's a catchword. Don't be a show-off. The first luchat that we're giving with such noise, commotion, thunder, lightning, were destroyed. The second luchat given b'tzniyut, Moshe Rabbeinu, along with the Ribbono Shel Olam, those luchat survived. So, Reb Meir Shapiro, he got up and said, this was part of the drasha, the Jews in Egypt, they were almost enveloped by Mentet Shari Tuma. The Jews in Egypt now had to leave, now had to become a free people. They had to accept the Torah. They had to march towards Eretz Yisrael. They weren't ready. They had to be awakened. They had to be shocked. We needed the Matan Torah. We needed the public affair. We needed the thunder and lightning and all that happened. Wake up. Take responsibility. Leave the status of Avdat. Yes, the luchot were later broken. And there's a lot to be said for the luchot shniyot and tzniyot. But the public event played its role. And Reb Meir Shapiro said, Jews today in Poland, broken in spirit, impoverished, downtrodden, second-rate citizens, anti-Semitism, our next-door neighbor, Germany. We have to wake up. We have to shock them. We have to bring them to a new standard. This is why I am planning to build such a magnificent building, campus, facilities for Long Day Torah. See, this was very powerful. And in parentheses, there was a sideshow that the Rav stressed. He also mentioned, quoted the Gemara. Remember, I quoted the Gemara to you in Zvachim. He also mentioned, I think it's Kuf Tafav, if I recall, Baal Peh, that it was important for the Goyim to know, we Jews are here to stay. We're not going to yield and bend and surrender and give up our heritage. Very important. Iyov and the others heard Matan Torah, something magnificent happening. Shivat Hachmei Lublin, something great, wonderful, innovative, different. Am Yisrael Chai V'Kayam. Okay. Now, there's more to this. And you'll see the footnotes. This doctorate is very well done, and he yet interviewed 20 years ago people who were still alive, who saw this with their own eyes. And this takes us back to the modern world. The assimilation, the intermarriage, people can get the finest chinuch and they throw it all away. And I take you back to what happened to me in a hotel in Israel, in Caesarea, I believe it was. So I was speaking about the difficulties of chinuch in Israel, particularly late 40s, early 50s, Zionism, secular Zionism, what we spoke about yesterday, very big. And kids get the finest chinuch. I said, Eitz Chaim graduates, how many remain from? 20%, 15%. And this man in the Bekeshik gets up, and finished, raises his hand, Rabbi Rakefet in Hebrew with an Israeli accent. Found that lady lives in South Florida, not a poor man, real estate. He says, I want to make one correction. You say 20%, 15%. I graduated Eitz Chaim 1948, 125 students. I'm the only one who remained the Shomer Shabbos. So you see, in Poland at that time already, everyone's assimilating. And Rav Meir Shapiro attributed to the poverty. I'm quoting now from a personal interview by someone who knew the situation. He felt that the yeshiva students were enticed to leave the world of Torah because they could not stand up to the test of sleeping on benches, eating teg, and as a result, deserted Torah. And this was Rav Meir Shapiro. He never lacked for money. His father was well-to-do. His in-laws, they say, were even wealthier. He never lacked for money. But he saw what was happening to his friends. He wanted to give them, underline the word, dignity. Their duty was to study diligently, but the community had to care for their needs, food, accommodation, and above all, quoting Rav Meir Shapiro, dignity. Underline that word, dignity. And here he said, why do we have to have a building that's second rate to the universities that was so attractive? Why can't the yeshiva campus be equal and better to any university? And his whole approach, the classes, the students, what they were teaching, the level they were teaching, the pedagogy, it was on a different level. Now, Rabbi Rubin, I don't know if he's on screen, I hope he's feeling better, but Rabbi Rubin asked me, Yitzchak is good, good, I hope you're feeling better, Yitzchak. It was a thrilling day yesterday with a family that you helped make from and keep from, and to see them in Israel with so many descendants. You have a big schut that comes out of Westchester, Pennsylvania. It was a family. The father of the man who came to see me yesterday was the president of Rabbi Rubin's congregation when he was Rav, after he was a chaplain in Westchester, Pennsylvania. So, this entire concept, Yitzchak asked, did they have secular studies? Not per se. A Polish chassid couldn't envision the concept of a gymnasium and a high school, but what they did study was not just shas and paiskim. There was chinuch, Hasidic sforim with a thrust on philosophy. It was speaking. They wanted the Talmidim to teach and speak and learn how to conduct themselves as Rabbanim. Remember I told you last week, Talmidim went to all the shuls in the Lublin area giving she'orim in daf yomi. Rav Meir Shapiro was a magnificent speaker, a member of the SEM, Polish, Yiddish. Students were raised. And by the way, you should know that Rabbi Revel introduced this. Read Revel, written by that guy, what's his name, Aaron Rothkopf, whoever he is. It's a different world. But read Revel. You'll see he introduced classes in pedagogy and homiletics at the yeshiva, and some of the frumma kids, what are you doing? Chadasha sumina Torah. And he didn't know what to do. And I tell a whole story that he gives a whole drasha to show them why they need homiletics. In other words, it's part of being a rabbi. And this was the Maram Shapiro. Now, I want to add another chapter here, which he has a very fascinating footnote. And I knew about this, but there's really no research that has been done. Was Rav Meir Shapiro the first one to really see this problem? So you should know that in Warsaw, you see, this problem, the Agudat Yisrael, when you speak of Warsaw Jewry, Aguda became king. Aguda became king because the Gera Rebbe was an Agudist, the Chatkava Rebbe was an Agudist. When I was a kid growing up, the Sonny Charlie, Morty, do you remember this? Aguda put out 12 little booklets. This is before you had so much material printed on Torah. One of the booklets were pictures of Gedolei Yisrael who identified with Agudat Yisrael. Nathan Birnbaum's picture, the Chutka of the Rebbe, Rebbe Yisrael Friedman, the Gera Rebbe, the Re'em, Rebbe Avraham Mordechai. They knew this. They sensed it. Now, this is a problem that we had in the last century. Lakewood produces 1,000 graduates. in a 10-year period. They need panasa. YU produces 1,000 graduates, some go into the rabbinate, some become professors, some lawyers, some accountants. Today, everyone high tech, investment, etc., startup companies. But we're talking Lakewood during Aaron's time, after Aaron's time. What can they do? Not everyone can be a rabbi. How many shtelas are open? How many shtelas want a Lakewood graduate? In Manhattan now, you had this big fight. Park East Synagogue. The rabbi is only a Lakewood Panovich graduate, has no bachelor's. Shul split over this machoikis. Some of them become teachers. The day schools need teachers. Not everyone is a great teacher. No, who stepped into this? This is Mr. Mendelovich. Torah Mesora. He organized summer seminars to produce teachers, to help teachers, to complement, supplement what they learned in Lakewood. This has been a problem from time immemorial. Just because you're a great Talmud Chacham doesn't mean you can be a successful teacher. And I told you yesterday the stories of MTA out of the 60s. This kid has me as a Rebbe, he loves me, he's learning Gemara. Next year he has a different Rebbe, who I also know. He never opened the Gemara again. The Rebbe so turned him off. And then you have to, and I know that Rebbe, and it's true. I could succeed with many different types of kids. He, if you didn't have a kid who was into learning, he turned you off. You have to develop. So you should know, the Aguda opened the teacher's seminary in Warsaw. And it was shocking. There was so much opposition. Once again, Chadash Asum in HaTorah. What's going on here? Classes, pedagogy. Mr. Abrams once said to me, I quote him, I had a kid, we had problems. So I said to the manal of the yeshiva, Mr. Norman B. Abrams, a legendary figure in my time and name that most of you never heard about. But he's in the Rav and he's in Revel. I said to Mr. Abrams, I think this young man needs psychological help. And Norman B. Abrams says to me, I quote word by word, Arnold, I didn't grow up with psychologists, you didn't grow up with psychologists, and if this young man is to make it, he will grow up without psychologists. And there was such opposition. Now, the description of that teacher's seminary, here, you see in the footnote, who was accepted? Only young men with beards, with payas, with Hasidic clothes, and were known as being very religious and were inclined to teaching. And nevertheless, tremendous opposition. Chadash Asur Min HaTorah. Now, there was another innovation, you see, we Jews, opposition, losing out. How many times in my life people came to me and I walked away crying. No panasa, no way to make a living. Compromises with compromise, and ultimately threw away everything they received in Torah. And I can give you many, many examples. In America, in Israel, wow. But this is inborn in us. Chadash Asur Min HaTorah. And I understand that we know what we have, we don't know what we're getting. There was another great innovation at this time. Beis Yaakov, Sarah Shnira. And you know, you have to understand what was happening here. yeshiva boys could not get married. They couldn't find girls who were willing to marry and live a yeshiva type life, a rabbinate type life. They couldn't handle it. Fiddler on the Roof, as I've told you so many times, Shalom Aleichem, you write a play, you write a novel, you write a story, but it's reality. Reality. You couldn't make it up. You know, girls are starting to go to high school. Girls are starting to go to university. I mean, I knew people who boasted they were the first female graduates lawyers in this community 100 years ago. Is unbelievable, innovative. How many girls remain from Fiddler on the Roof is a prime example. That was life. Who's going to marry a yeshiva boy? Along comes Sarah Schneer, and she saw all her friends falling away. And now Rabbi David Slavin, who wrote this beautiful doctorate, he didn't have access. I quoted in class over the last few years. A volume came out by someone who had studied with me in Michlala, Naomi Zeidman, although she's not in the Michlala thinking today. Beautiful volume on Sarah Schneer, really an excellent volume. And I found out that all the credit goes to Rav Shmuel Fol Hirsch. It comes back to what I asked my mother-in-law. I asked my mother-in-law, Zichrona Tzadeket Levracha, I just got a letter, someone writing about Rabbi Shechter, the Rosh Yeshiva, Rabbi Aaron Shechter, Rosh Yeshiva of Chaim Berlin. He's writing. I said, you don't have to tell me who he is. It's my mother-in-law student, third grade. She was his teacher in elementary yeshiva, Brooklyn, Bensonhurst. So I once asked my mother-in-law, how could it be, born in America, 1908, 1906, never, there were no yeshiva. Whoever heard of yeshiva, but who heard for women? There was absolutely nothing. How did you remain from? And she told me when she was in high school, she read the 19 letters of Rav Shmuel Fol Hirsch came out in English translation. And she studied the 19 letters. And that opened her eyes to what Torah in the Western world is all about. Sarah Schneer, Abel's Chassida, from Abel's Chassidic family in Vienna, heard Rabbi Spitzer preach. And Rabbi Spitzer, who was already from the Hirschian school, and I davened this morning, as every morning, with Spitzer, his great-great-great-great-great-grandson. 7 generations of males, Spitzer, son-in-law of the Chatam Sofer, davened this morning with his direct descendants. Part of our minyan. I'm davening the shul 53 years. He must be there at least 40 years at least. So Rabbi Spitzer preached a sermon quoting Rav Hirsch, the 19 letters. That got Sarah Schneer interested, involved, and it changed her life. She opened up Beis Yaakov. And Beis Yaakov, what it accomplished. One time, the Kloisenberger Rebbe told the Panovitcher Rav, there's a whole footnote here, I envy you what the schuyot you have with establishing the Panovitcher Yeshiva. And the Panovitcher Rav answered him, the schut all goes to Beis Yaakov, the Sarah Schneer. I could only establish a yeshiva because there were women willing to marry the graduates. And now, with all that I've said about Beis Yaakov, do you know how much opposition there was to Beis Yaakov? Women? Viva? Tiflis? Kamelame bipaitaira kilolimda tiflis? The Gemara in Sota? Flying, daft, and learning. Mein Mama hat nicht gelernt, sie ist ein Tzadekes. Mein Baba hat nicht gelernt, sie ist ein Tzadekes. Wow, the opposition. You all know the opposition from my lectures on Satma. The Satma Ruv opened a school for Maidlach in Williamsburg. People wanted to cut his throat. Never. You're opposed to Beis Racha, opening a Beis Racha. See? So you see, the Maram Shapiro, unfortunately, was in good company. And you have to understand, this was Achmas Nefesh. He had to fight his way every inch of the way. More than that, the Litvishi Yeshivat, who had great success and great reputation. But once again, you have the problem. Money. Another yeshiva, a magic fundraiser, the Maram Shapiro, an elegant speaker, it's going to cut into our income. Vic, what does that remind you of? Remember the story I told you about Jamaica in Queens, an established Orthodox shul, and the Rebbe came and opened the shtibble, and they took the Rebbe to the Torah. They drove him out. All right, the rest of the story you know. He went to Kew Gardens Hills, and they were just beginning. You got to remember that Queens was next to Staten Island, the next to the last area that Torah Jews went into. Torah Jews went the Lower East Side, Manhattan, Brooklyn, the Bronx, Washington Avenue, where Talmud just gave me a book, a translation of Yiddish, a Yiddish writer. They came out in English. He picked up the book at some second-hand books they saw. One chapter on Washington Avenue. I couldn't believe my eyes. Washington Avenue on 180th. It's a short story. It's exactly, I grew up, Washington Avenue, 180th. That's my corner. That's my bus stop. That's my house. And an interesting story where a Malamed from Europe is trying to get a job, and the Talmud Torah is there, Washington Avenue, the shuls, the jealousy. But, wow. The enmity, the, I mean, lustnished. And Rabbi Fabian Schoenfeld was a genius. He was just beginning. Whoever heard of Frum Jews in Queens? That big conservative temples. But Frum Jews? And he reached out. And I told you, he sent some of his own balabatim to Main Street, to the Rebbe, help him make a minyan. And you know what became of Kew Gardens Hills as a result. Ah. And this Reb Meir Shapiro. Now, one step further. With all due respects to Kew Gardens Hills, the Gullus is the Gullus. You all know in New York today, they're opening up, I think it's 50 stores to sell drugs, legal drug, cannabis, whatever they legalized. You can correct me, is it cannabis? Why do I finish that sabaki? But that's what I think I read. One of the places they want to open is right on Main Street in Kew Gardens Hills. You have no idea what that will do to the community. As is, the community went down, and I have to say it's the Georgian element, the Bukharan element, that they're coming out of Forest Hills and further elsewhere in Queens and coming towards Hillcrest and Kew Gardens. They're keeping the neighborhood up. Plain and simple. But you can imagine when they're trying to fight it. In the meantime, I heard that the city gave permission for 50 different stores that are going to be legal. So you see, whatever you do in Chutz Laretz is limited. Where I was bar mitzvahed, it's a church today. My brother went on to the website about synagogues in the Bronx, and many are gone, raised, and many are churches, plain and simple. That's the story. In contrast to Mea Shearim, where it cost more today to buy a home in Mea Shearim than it did 150 years ago when Mea Shearim began. As you all know, I have a student from Gris Kollel who married a lady from what became a very prominent family, the Prime Minister of Israel. She went to the secular high school here, gymnasium on Rehov Keren Kayemet Yisrael, and I don't know the story, they keep a very private life. In high school, she became totally from. Married my student from here, Smicha, later went to Kollel and Hakotel. Today they live in the Mea Shearim area, and they send their children to Acheda v'minret no Yiddish, they don't fashtein, Aron Rakefet, when they get their baptism in Yiddish, they don't fashtein. Unlike Vic's family, where already the second, third generation says, speak Goyish, not Yiddish.
Their son made a
Siyam HaShas
at 13.
And yet, the son did a Siyam HaShas at 13, the Prime Minister attended. I don't know, he has a schut avot. It's unbelievable. But wow. But you see, in Israel, it lasts. The buildings, only more beautiful and more beautiful. It lasts. Now, here we come to again, I want to go through in detail and show you how he faced the choice, what the pros and cons were. Unfortunately, when we look back 100 years later, he made the wrong choice. But the truth was, I don't think he could have chosen otherwise. And here you have to come back to the world of the 1920s. And again, if you're going to try to understand it walking through Flatbush today or walking through Lakewood today, you will not understand it. If you go back to the 1920s, you will understand it. Zionism was conquering the world. World War I and the endless pogroms taught the Jews, we have to get out. If you're a thinking Jew, and you care, even those who were not Zionists and couldn't go along with secular Zionism, but Zionism was in the air. Then the greatest proof, Hebron. Slabodka comes an aliyah to Hebron. The Alta from Slabodka. Wow. What a story. What an achievement. Zionism was in the air. Unfortunately, we all know what happened with Hebron, but notice, even after the massacre, the slaughter, Hebron didn't go back to Slabodka. It stayed in Yerushalayim. And he gave birth. Today in Yerushalayim you have at least 3 different yeshivas that are a result of Hebron in 29. Now, Rav Meir Shapiro, and you felt that this is Eretz Yisrael, Zionism, everything, it had to have an impact on a Torah Jew, even if you weren't a Mizrachist. And by the way, many of the Mizrachistim, the Rishona dynasty, many of the Rabbeim officially identified the Mizrachi after World War I, etc. So Reb Meir Shapiro had a real dilemma. 2 communities in Israel, and you've got to see the footnotes. 2 communities in Israel invited him to build. One was Yerushalayim and one was Tzfat. Now, what was so special about Tzfat? Everyone understands Yerushalayim, but if you notice, Hebron bypassed Yerushalayim by choice. And Abe, you know what the reason was? We know today why they chose Hebron, not Yerushalayim. Reb Heskel's son was sent to help the Alta make a decision to spy out the area. It's an interesting history of Hebron. And the Kanoim in Yerushalayim, you see, Hebron, everyone was clean-shaven. And they wore the latest style clothes. They wouldn't dress like Rakefet with a sweatshirt. They would have a beautiful suit, a sharp tie. When I learned in Lakewood, Reb Geshem Sachs, Reb Mendel's son, he was the sharpest dresser. Later, Rosh Yeshiva. I wonder in Israel if he dressed also. Where was he in Israel? Slabatka, I think. And then he broke away from Slabatka. And he was the sharpest dresser. Slabatka, Gadlatatam. The Meisharim Jews, what? Eisfats. Wie geht mir an sie? Wie geht? Follow me. So they ran away to Hebron, which was a Chabad community. And Chabad was always more open. So it was a perfect shidduch in Hebron with the Slonims, the Alter Rebbe's descendants, the Rav of Hebron. Ah, the tragedy, how it ends there. We should be inspired to strengthen our army, our police force, etc. So Tzvar had a tremendous attraction. And had he chosen Israel, I think he would have chosen Tzvar. Why? Virgin territory, number one. Number two, Tzvat, the Ari HaKodesh, the Kabbalah, Hasidus revealed. Tzvat, a certain pool, the hills, the Lechadodi, Reb Shlomo Alkabetz. Lechadodi, you don't realize what it. What an achievement that is. It's the latest addition to the davening that every nusach has accepted. Every nusach. And just when you say the Migdash Melech Yimaluch, Kumi Mitoch HaChafrich. It's beyond words. It's you. It's us. It's real. The influence. By the way, they're alphabets living in Israel, direct descendants of Rav Shlomo. So you see, it had a tremendous pull. Halavai, he would have chosen Tzvat. David Halavai, Halavai. But there are other factors involved. Number one, the student body. Maram Shapira, everyone, it's Poland, that's where they know him. It's also the fundraising aspect. See, Reb Meir Shapiro learned bitterly about fundraising. It would have brought in a lot more American money. If you would say, we're building a yeshiva in Palestine, in Eretz Yisrael, Al Admat HaKodesh, Zionism, Mizrachiites, secular Zionists, but who came from good stock, it would have brought in more money. On the other hand, it's not just money you need to build the building, build the campus. What we find out afterwards, and Rabbi Revel found out the hard way, he builds the campus, along comes the Depression, you need the ongoing funds. And ongoing funds would have been a lot easier in Poland. There it is. There's the yeshiva. It's tangible. It's before your eyes. These are your children. All right. I don't say in Poland you're not going to get $1 million towards the campus, which you might get in America, but the ongoing funds, that's $100,000 a month, the upkeep you would get in Poland. And he faced a very, very difficult decision here. Now, it may also be, and here he has a footnote, which I cry when I tell you about it, but this is reality. Rabbi Yehoshua of Kutna, one of the great Gedolim, he was one of those who signed off on the Het HaMechira for the Shnat Shemitah. He's Zionist, Rabbi Yehoshua Kutner visited Israel. And he gives you the source for the quote here. And he comes back and he says the following: nothing remains of its former glory. The land is desolate. The only thing that is intact from the time of Bayit Sheni is the Sinat Chinam. Got it? The Gemara in Gittin, Nun Hei, Amid Bet. Why was Churban Bayit Sheni? They were all tzaddikim. No one worshipped idols. The Sinat Chinam. A good word. After I read that Litvisha attack on anyone going to the demonstration, the Sinat Chinam. And see, when you have to make a decision, so all these factors are involved. Poland, I know the land. Svat, the Ari HaKodesh. Money, America, ongoing support, Poland. But the Sinat Chinam in Eretz Yisrael. And he decided, and it's in retrospect so sad, the Gestapo, Hitler, what happened to the building a few years later, but let's build it in Poland. Now, why Lublin? You have Lodz, you have Warsaw, big Polish cities. Why Lublin? And here, this too is a factor, you're all familiar with it. Why did the Baron Cutler choose Lakewood? Lakewood actually began in a suburb of New York City, Reb Mendel Sachs, but it didn't catch on. Reb Baron chose Lakewood. Why did he choose Lakewood? So, again, we don't have a definitive proper history of Reb Aaron Cutler. I took exception, and it hurts me, and it hurts because it turns out that the family of the author, the Dershowitz family, some of them direct descendants of the author who's no longer alive, listened to my shir, and I spoke very sharply against the book because it describes Reb Aaron's sister, older sister, Malka, that she left the path of Aguda, but she became a Mizrahiite. She was totally irreligious, etc., etc. And you don't do justice to Reb Aaron, because you got to show the world in which he grew up, in which Reb Yaakov Kamenetsky grew up, and do justice that they rose above it and remained what they remained, and you don't do justice to Reb Reuven Grzybowski, who pulled Reb Aaron off the bus going to Moscow to join his sister in university. All right, but...
Train,
but whatever. A wagon drawn by horses. But it could be it was a train. Okay, we'll accept that. There were trains then. But you get the story. We don't have a definitive biography of Reb Aaron. But from what I was told when I learned in Lakewood, Reb Aaron didn't want the big city. It has too many distractions. When BMT was located on Rehovot Abarbanel, so all the students went to the center of town every night. I remember there was the Thanksgiving Massacre. I don't know if anyone recalls that, where I don't think Robert Hurwitz acted properly. You know, I don't agree with what he did. But the kids celebrated Thanksgiving. Hers was very, they had, well, Marvatak Samim, I think it was called, they arranged to have a dinner there. And he was angry at the students. He told them off. And, all right, American kids celebrate Thanksgiving Day. They missed my Seder. I wouldn't turn it into a federal place. But, all right, the kids were in town. Richie's Pizza's opened. It was let's tell you, at the most a 10-minute walk from where BMT began. And that was, do you remember Richie's Pizza? That was epic making. Today my grandchildren think pizza is, they don't realize until they travel, Pizza's not indigenous to Israel. It began in Italy.
Every corner is.
All right, but on Yom HaTzmut, you're supposed to eat falafel. I saw already, you know, meat is not healthy anymore, but falafel, that is indigenous to Israel. I'm going to buy falafel tomorrow. Have it on my shopping list. Okay, Baruch Hashem. So Lakewood had the advantage, it's away from a major city. In addition, you got to raise funds to support the yeshiva. Lakewood had hotels. In those days, Florida, there was no airfare, air traffic. It's not like today. Today, yeshiva week, everyone winds up in Florida. Yeshiva week, they might as well call Florida a branch of Yeshiva University and the modern Orthodox world, mixing with Satmar down in Miami Beach. You need support. A bus ride was under 2 hours from New York to Lakewood. Hotels, people would come there. Pesach, Yom HaNarayim, Sukkot. You could make appeals for the Lakewood Yeshiva. People would stare in, there are all types of stories, into the windows of the Lakewood Yeshiva, Bochum, Zitzin, and Lerin, and Teira. Revolutionary. You have a Jewish heart, you're a survivor. Who are the Jews we're talking about? DPs who made a little bit of money in Brooklyn and Lower Manhattan. They gave. Well, you see, Lakewood met that need. I can tell you, I write about this in Washington, it's also very moving for me, and it's absolutely true. The vice president of the shul, and I look back now, you know, I did a few good things in my life, but no one can believe Malka and I built the Orthodox shul, first Orthodox shul in suburban Essex County, with these fingers. So the vice president was Abra Dean. He died shortly afterwards, but Abra, a Yiddish mensch, I think he was in America before World War II. Newark, the crowd, the children, Dina was a son of I wonder if they were conservative Jews, but they did have some feeling. I hope that their great-grandchildren alive today, maybe even listening, would be a miracle. So Abra Dean went Rabaron's last year of life, 62, Sukkot, he was in Lakewood. And he went to the yeshiva, he gave a donation, and he spoke with Rabaron. And he says to Rabaron, I'm going to say it in Yiddish and I'll translate. Unser Rav is gelernt in Lakewood. Leider Rosh Yeshiva gedenkst dem, wie heis, what? Our rabbi learned in Lakewood. Maybe the Rosh Yeshiva remembers him. What's his name? And he says, Rotkov. Rotkov, yeah. The Rosh Yeshiva could thank. And he says, Und die Schul hat a Mechitza? Does the Schul have a Mechitza? And Abe says, yeah. When the Esther Schul in the Gegend, where the first Schul in this Gegend neighborhood, that has a Mechitza. Rabbi Aaron's eyes lit up with joy. So that's Lakewood. That's a beautiful story that captures what I'm telling you. This is one of the reasons he chose Lublin. Warsaw was a much bigger city. Lodz was bigger. Lublin was smaller. But there were Jews there. You could turn to them. You could make an appeal. But it was smaller, less distractions. How do I know Warsaw? Let me tell you Warsaw. Okay. I had a wonderful neighbor. I was Zeicher, 18 Berlin. The building opened 1969 at the end of the year. It was ready for occupancy. And I'm one of the few original occupants that, thank God, is alive and kicking. So I had a wonderful neighbor, Rabbi Yoshua Hutner. He had just married a second marriage, Batsheva Soloveitchik Hutner, Batsheva Ziv Soloveitchik Hutner. And they got married in Switzerland. I asked them, why did you get married in Switzerland? He said, the second marriage, you always have problems. Who to invite? Who not to offend? Who be offended? That's marrying a second time. What about the family? Got married in Switzerland. No one was there. It was just a little chuppah. So, Rav Putner would tell me stories of his life. So he tells me, you know, he grew up in a little shtetl. His grandfather was the Rav. His grandmother ran the city, Eisishuk. And he went to Warsaw. Remember I told you, he went to Warsaw the first time. He said he couldn't believe what he saw in Warsaw. A newsstand with papers from around the world. England, France, Russia, even America. And that's where he came back. Remember I told you the story when I gave lectures on Chadash HaSim and the Torah? He came back with two shirts he bought with stays that today you don't put it, you had to put in, you remember the same? Today it's built in like here, but there you take it and take it out. And his grandmother, the Revitzin, the focal figure in the town, read what's been written about Eisishuk. And she starts crying. Chadash Asum in the Torah. Today you change the style of shirts. Tomorrow you'll change the style in your shoes. And the day afterwards you'll take off the kippah. And this was Warsaw, a big city with all this outside influence. No. He loved Lublin. It was not a shtetl, but a medium size city. And there were Jews there. There were Jews. You could turn to them. Now, there's one more fact, and I'll end off with this. Why Lublin? Lublin had a tremendous reputation when the Jews first settled in Poland. The Torah center was Lublin. That's where it all began. Reb Yaakov Polak, a whole new way of learning. The Rama, the Maharam, the Mashal, this was all in the Lublin area. All of them Talmidim of Reb Yaakov Polak. The name, the Maram Lublin, who was mayor of Lublin, the original one, with his parish. This was the tradition, this was the city, this was the name. This was pulsating among the Jews. Center of medieval Jewish life, politically and intellectually, the Vara Bar Ratzot, everything centered around Lublin. And then came the Chmelnytsky massacres. 1648, 1649, by the time it was over, 100. It was the worst massacres ever until Hitler, Yimach Shmo. Over 100,000 Jews massacred. Polish Jewry, Lublin, Gadlut and Torah, almost totally destroyed. Lithuania, Litha went on the map, because they did not suffer anywhere near what Poland suffered during the Chmelnytsky massacres. And from that point on, the center, the focus, the apex of Torah learning, Rabbonim, Gedolei Yisrael, everything centers on Litta. It paves the way for Hasidus, because Lithuanian Jewry was powerful, successful, wonders. They looked down at the Polish Yidden who were downtrodden, impoverished, no time to learn. Second-rate Jews, Shabtai Tzvi, tremendous influence in Poland. That's how Hasidus is born. It saves Polish Jewry. The Litvakim didn't need it, but it saves Polish Jewry. And the Maram Shapiro wants to bring Lublin back to its prestige to become a major center of Torah life once again. Now, the Jews were a dominant part of the population. I can give you a figure here. In 1896, the total population of Lublin was 48,758. Jews accounted for 23,788. So you see, for all these reasons, he chose Lublin. Suffered. He really, in his heart, he was dreaming Israel, Palestine. He'll go back. He'll build again. But I has to start in Lublin, in Poland. He chose Lublin. And he went ahead fundraising all over the world. The cornerstone is there. How do you go from a cornerstone to the campus that would be one of a kind? Okay, we'll pick up exactly where we're leaving off here. Next week, Be'ezrat HaNotein LaYa'ov Koach. Ben, what is troubling your good mind?
What's the strongest evidence that he wanted to go to Israel?
Oh, he spoke, you'll see the footnotes, he spoke about it. This was David Yadua, and he said in public that his heartache in making the decision, and he wanted to visit, and he visited, and you'll see, it's no secret. You don't need evidence, it's memoir literature. But he wanted, and he chose. And look, I got to tell you something. If I were the Maram Lublin, I would make the same decision. You understand why? You know, when I came to Israel, I got advice from B'nai Kiviniks that were here quite a few years before me. I won Chinuch. And they said to me, Aaron, you're going to have a big problem in Israel. You got to become an Israeli Mechanech. You're an American. I had a miracle that BMT began literally a few months after I got off the boat. So imagine, I remain in Israel 53 years and I remain a good mechanech with heavy American overtones. And I have many drushot on this, the Gemara in Megillah, Daf Chavtet, Atidin Batei Knesiyot. Okay. And it's a good drushot. Why, do we need shuls from America? You're going to read. By the way, in Netanya, there is a shul they brought over from South Africa, brick by brick, and numbered it. And they brought over South African workers. They didn't trust the Israelis to put it together. They housed the South Africans in hotels here.
Netanya or Ra'anana?
Netanya, I know. Ra'anana may also have, but I know in Netanya, yeah. I was there. I was. My Talmud today is the Rav there, I believe. I spoke there. Oh, wow. Only English. Only English. Wouldn't let me speak Hebrew. I couldn't get over it. Brick by brick. But generally speaking, but we need the ideas. In America, it took us hundreds of years, but we learned how to teach and disseminate Torah in dignity. This was not easy.
It's
yes,
Rav Cooperman's nephew.
Right.
Rav Cooperman Shul, they brought over a lot of the Shul from Dublin.
And really the
Aaron Kodesh, the Bima, the Rav's podium.
So I want to tell you the shul in Miami Beach. You know what I'm talking about? And it's in Bal Harbor actually. Right there, right near Surfside, a few blocks from Surfside where the building collapsed. It became a center of support during the collapse and food and wow. It's a Chabad shul, the shul. It's a multi-million dollar shul. There's a There's a $3-4 million in Israel that was built a few blocks away now to rival it. I would call him a devotee of mine, Jackie Gluck, who chaired the building committee. That's the story of the guy who walked in Shabbos in work clothes, dirty clothes, and Jackie, who said Shabbat Shalom, was Makarov. Turned out he was an Israeli who was raised in Meir Sharim, etc., made it very big, and was coming back to Yiddishkeit. And he comes into the shul, and Jack comes back, and says, when the building campaign begins, I think he put down $1 million. He said, you were said Shabbat Shalom to me, you didn't ask about my clothes, where I was coming from, you were makar of me. $1 million on the Avoda shoot. You have to see it. I spoke there too. I unfortunately, I'm never going to see these places again, at least.
I think it's a Surfside address because the Aleph Institute's house.
Ah, so it's a Surfside address. It's right next to Bal Harbor. The other shoot, I think it's called the Unusual Bal Harbor. And there's a, anyway, in the shoot.
Is separate?
Yeah, separate. It's a few blocks away. In the shoot, it's further north. In the shoot is a whole Polish shtibble that they brought over from Poland. What you just said, the Aron Kodesh, where they lay in the Torah, the fence around the area where you lay in, and what a story. But that shul, my best story is, Jackie has just moved from the five towns, from Woodmere to this area, and he comes into the shul, that's where he started davening. There was a young Israel, very small. It was in a storefront. The lady goes there, and this guy is sitting next to him with a Chabad hat and the whole, you know, dress, the from guy, Shabbos, davening. And finally Jackie gets to talk with him, and where do you live? It turns out the guy was driving the place 10 miles to shul on Shabbos to daven with the rabbi, who was so charismatic. So it wasn't for Jackie, this type of environment. And the young Israel already is a young Israel. Yeah?
I understand from Dublin to Israel, Malin Bekodesh.
Malin Bekodesh, well said. All right, that's better. Here it's from Poland to Surfside, I don't know. Okay. But that shul, it's just called the shul. And he is a powerful figure, Rabbi Lipska. They say, of all the Chabad Shluchim, no one equals him in fundraising. And that's the Aleph Institution that helps prisoners. And they put out a book to give out that the fundraising. And the first article in the book is Dina D'Machot. My work on Dina D'Machot, it's republished in the Rakav Aron Chelek Aleph Chelek Bet. So I got in touch with him, at least ask my permission, I'll gladly give it. I'm not going to ask you for royalties, but at least the authors will know, no one knows the authors. Certain things you publish, they go so mainstream, no one believes the author's still around. When YU honored the Rebel Stamp, the government honored YU, so the postmaster, it was a whole thing, it happened to be in America. So I'm there. The Postmaster General almost fainted. The author of the book, it's like the Rebel book. It's like it was written 1,000,000 years ago. He finally said, all right, today it's 4 editions later. Anyway, so what did we do today? We're viewing the Maram Lublin as a human being, the decisions, the life. And unfortunately, the best vod of the whole shir is Rabbi Yehoshua Mikutna. All that remains of Bayit Sheni is the Sinat Chinam, and that challenge I must overcome it. I want to thank you all. I haven't had such a wonderful class, participation, faces, thankfulness. Rebbe, we appreciate what you're doing. I thank you. Yomo, can you? I called Evelyn, and everything that I wanted to dictate, I told her over the phone. Okay.
So am I fired yet or not?
What?
Am I fired yet or not?
No, you're not. And you're not fired. I need you. What can I do? Open it. But I wish you would listen to the Rebbe. He's not an Amoritz, and life is life. Someone asked you, is this product good? You have to say the truth. That's the halacha. But I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just saying I'm caught in the...
Recording stopped.
Okay. Can you unmute them?
They're already unmuted.
They're unmuted. Are there any questions? Yitzchak, how are you feeling? Yitzchak, can you hear me? He's not responding. Can you hear me? Jack, can you hear me? Yeah, Jack hears me. Okay.
Oh.
Unmute everyone. All right. Are there any questions from around the world? Okay, so
I want to thank you, Rav Aaron, for what you nice things you said about Doug Raven in Westchester.
You don't have to thank me. I couldn't believe it. They're bothering me to meet me. Now, I don't like to meet people that I don't know. I'm not a Hasidic Rebbe, and people think I can do miracles. I've done miracles, but I don't think I can do them. It's only God blesses me, the miracle works out. As you know, with Russia, what we were able to do, your family, my family. So these people are bothering me to meet me. And she's the granddaughter from Boston. And all right, finally, we make up a time, 8 o'clock Sunday morning. So they come, and we start talking, and where did you grow up? He tells me, Westchester, Pennsylvania. I say to him, wasn't Rabbi Reuben the rabbi there? He says, that's my rabbi, my sister's rabbi, my father's rabbi. So, wow, and then you told me that his father had been the president. So I got to tell you, they're B'nai Torah, Rabbi Shubo's granddaughter. She's the only one in the family. I asked about her siblings, others. You know, it's the usual story of Yiddishkeit in America, although at least I get the feeling they remain Jewish. They're not intermarried. I may be wrong. But he is a real Ben Torah, and he's a first-class doctor. I don't know if you're aware of that. He's a first-class doctor, an expert in his field. He was telling me the field he's in, it resembles Pua, what we have here in Israel. And I was so impressed. That's why I called you. But it was interesting. He started talking about his father and his father's relationship with you and his sister. He said he came along later. But Baruch Hashem. So yeah, I'll tell you, we don't know what we did when we planted seeds. I get an email from YU that a Donna family that claims they were my first students in Maplewood are listening to me on YU Torah. And I'll tell you, I hope it's true. You tell me, the Donna family, this totally an American family moving quickly from Newark to Maplewood and losing a great deal along the way. And here they tell me it has to be a son of the family I knew, a grandson of the original Mr. Gelber, who was a balabas of the Angel of Newark, and they're listening to YU Torah, Ashreinu Shezachinu. Let me end off with a cute story with the Donna family. So she was a Donna, but her brother remained, it was obviously a Gelber, that was her original name, her maiden name. So one time, I'm walking with Malka on Shabbos, maybe coming home from shul, or coming from a kiddush in Maplewood, and he's getting ready to pull his car out. And he sees the rabbi walking with his wife. He quickly jumps to the side, and he starts picking flowers. And we come by and, say good Shabbos to him. Now, I want to, he didn't realize picking flowers may be a bigger sin than driving the car. Find out where there's Malacha D'Oraita and where there's Malacha D'Rabbanan. I don't know. We need a physicist who understands the mechanics of the car to tell us which is worse of a sin. But unfortunately, that was Judaism in America, and those were the people I was dealing with. All right, I want to thank everyone for honoring me with their presence, both on screen and both live. And I want to wish everyone a Shavuot Tov. We should only have Besorah Tovat, Yeshuat V'Nechamat, Aleinu V'Alkal Yisrael. Until we meet again in health and happiness, Das V'Danya. Thank you.